Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you this day. We have a great conversation ahead of us. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. The story of a life transformed. We're going to talk with Amy Kaufman, Director of Development at Humanitree today. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin. Just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section. There you'll find Concordia University Wisconsin, CUW, in the sponsor section there. Click on that, and that'll take you to more information about Concordia University Wisconsin. Joining me in studio today, Amy Kaufman. She serves as the Director of Development for Humanitree. Amy, welcome back to Worldwide KFUO. Glad to have you here on Faith and Family today.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate you having me.
Not too long ago, we had the chance to talk on His Time, our morning program, about Humanitree and the work of Humanitree. And it was in that conversation, learned that you have this amazing story, and thought, let's get together and chat. Let's share that story with our listeners on Faith and Family. Before we get to your personal story, let's talk about your work at Humanitree and a little bit for those who didn't catch the conversation the other day about Humanitree. What is Humanitree and what is the work that that Humanitree does?
Humanitree is a nonprofit Lutheran RSO agency. We have several different programs. Mm-hmm. One of our programs is an ex-offender program for a re-entry program, I'm sorry, for ex-offenders. We also have a chaplain in the St. Louis County Justice Center. And then we have a transitional housing program for St. Louis City homeless families.
And if I remember correctly from our conversation the other day, that you mentioned that Humanitree really serves people in some of the darkest days of life.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk about those darkest days, homelessness, domestic violence and abuse. Those are some of the things that just having extreme needs are some of those things that come up that we would describe as darkest days, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. A mother not knowing where to go with mm-hmm. her children, fleeing from domestic violence, substance abuse, somebody who wants the help but doesn't know where to start, being incarcerated, mm-hmm. Facing when you come out back into a community, feeling accepted. So, yeah, they're going through some difficult times, and we're there to stand by them and to help them and to walk with them and hopefully help them on their journey to get where they want to go in a life mm-hmm. that they want to lead.
Every life is important. Regardless of our background, every life is important to God and to us.
Yes.
And let's talk about your life. You have a story to share. Where does your story begin?
Well, I was actually introduced to the agency in 1999 as a client of the Transitional Housing Program. I was 23. I found myself a single mother of a 5-year-old, 4-year-old, and 3-year-old. When you would have asked me when I was younger what I wanted to be when I grew up, my answer would have been, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't mm-hmm. know career-wise what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be a mom. And that was just something that I had a lot of passion for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only thing that I thought I could do and do right.
And that's a noble vocation. That's an important vocation.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It is. I just had no other ambition or goals in mm-hmm. in the career aspect. So that's what I did. I became a mother. Anybody who does the math will realize I became a mother at a very young age. I was 18, my first child, 19 and 21 for the next children. And I loved it. I didn't go to college, but I had a full-time job at a retail store in the back office. Their father, he worked evenings at a restaurant. And I enjoyed that life. I enjoyed that responsibility mm-hmm. and that caring and the eating dinner together and bathing your children, telling them bedtime stories, putting them to bed. And, you know, having people who loved you unconditionally. Not that mm-hmm. my family and friends didn't, but it was just something different. And I loved it. Unfortunately, their father didn't have that same, I guess, excitement. Mm. And I don't blame him because we were very young. It was at times stressful. And I think he handled the stress differently than I did. He was in a position, I mean, our friends were going out, going to college or going out partying or doing something, and we weren't. So after work, he started going out. And I think he became kind of resentful to me for maybe being in this position, maybe forcing my dream upon him. And he began drinking more often. His behavior eventually turned to his resentment. I think the alcohol gave him the courage to let that resentment out verbally to me. So eventually it became abusive, verbal and emotional abuse. That went on for quite some time. I knew the person who I had met and who I had children with, and I believe that person was still in there. So I stuck by thinking this was just a rough time. The alcohol addiction eventually led to drug use, which led to physical violence, very erratic behavior. It wasn't predictable. He would come home at all times of night, and it was getting quite scary. The behavior was never directed towards the children. It was always me. But looking back now, I could see how it was harmful to them either way because they were in the household. One morning, he came in after all night of drinking and partying and I don't know what, and it turned into an argument because I was getting ready to leave for work, and he threatened to kill me and the children. And at that moment, I knew it was my responsibility to protect the children. We were no longer partners in this. That responsibility came to me, and I had no choice but to leave. And I took them to their babysitter. I went to work and confided in a coworker the situation and how severe it was, and I needed help, and I didn't know what to do or where to go. I just knew we couldn't go home. She had informed me of shelters for abused women and children. I grew up in a middle-class Catholic home. I knew there were shelters for the street homeless, for the people living on the street, the begging for change. Yeah. I didn't know that there were shelters out there for people who had homes, who had jobs, who were in tough situations, who needed help. And she gave me the number to the homeless hotline. I called that number and was given a couple instructions. The first one was they had space available and I had to be there by 4. I didn't get off work till 5. So I had to confide in my employer as to what was going on. And that was kind of a humiliating, embarrassing thing to reveal. But they understood. They were kind and supportive and understood, allowed me to leave. Not only did I have to be there by 4, but you can only take one bag for all of you, one bag of belongings, because a shelter, they're not big. They don't have a lot of storage.
Sure.
And that we had to be, we had to go to a restaurant. They couldn't tell me where it was located for confidential reasons.
Sure.
You know, the women all there are fleeing from abusers, and they don't want to make it easy for them to find. So it had to be confidential. So we were to go to a restaurant. When my friend dropped us off, we were to call on the cell phone or on the payphone, let them know we were there, and they would come get us. My friend had agreed to follow me home. I had my own vehicle at that time, but I could not take it with me because he would be able to find me through that. Mm. I couldn't quit my job, and I couldn't have my car out there saying, "Hey, I'm here." I was able, my employer allowed me to rearrange my work schedule, so I was able to work different hours. My friend followed me home, and at that moment, when you're inside your home, and Andy, I'm assuming you and the majority of the listeners have a place to live. And if you think about your home, think about everything that you own, what do you see when you walk in your door? When I walk in my front door, I see family photos. But I learned quickly, those are not a necessity when you have 1 hour to pack. And you quickly have to decide what is truly important. What do you need to survive? And those pictures, I mean, I left all my children's baby pictures behind. I left a lot of very sentimental items were left behind. And that was the situation. It was very sad. I also didn't have a suitcase that I thought was big enough for all 4 of us to put our belongings in. So I actually used a trash bag. That was just kind of another additional added thing that lowered my self-esteem. I mean, I'm packing my life up into a trash bag.
Yeah.
My children each got one toy, we had to leave everything else behind just because it wasn't a necessity. You quickly learn what do you need to survive, and that's clothes and shoes and undergarments and toothbrushes, just the basics yeah. is what we were able to take. We got to this restaurant, and this shelter was in an area. I'm a South City girl. I had no reason to ever leave South City, so I wasn't familiar with the area we were in. And we were brought to this restaurant, I guess I can call it. It was a chain restaurant. And my friend leaving, I think that was difficult for me, and it was difficult for her to think she was just leaving us in this place she knew I wasn't familiar with. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have much money on us. And she just had to kind of walk away. That was very difficult for her, and I felt very bad for putting her in that situation. And at the same time, very grateful to have a friend mm-hmm. who was there for me. And I will tell you, after calling the shelter to say, hey, we're here, send someone to come pick us up, a complete stranger, by the way, that was probably 10 minutes, but to me, it was an eternity mm-hmm. because in those 10 minutes, sitting there in a booth with my three children and a trash bag that compromised our, that composed our life, I started to believe everything the abuser had ever said about me. I was a complete failure. I was a loser. No one would ever love me. I was unlovable. And who would love a person who's was now not able to provide for her children and whose life was in a trash bag? I was all of that, and I believed it at that moment. And it was just so difficult because to have children, your own children who you're supposed to protect, mm-hmm. Looking at you saying, Mommy, are you okay? Mommy, what's wrong? Why are we here?
How do you explain that to a child?
It was in the inside. I was screaming and crying and very angry at myself. But on the outside, I had to tell them, which I didn't believe. I can tell you, I did not believe it was going to be okay. I had no idea how it could be okay. I had no plan. I had no idea who the person was who was coming to pick us up. I was putting my life in a stranger, and my children's lives mm-hmm. in a stranger's hands to trust that they were going to bring me where they said they were going to bring us. And they did. They brought us to the shelter and showed us to a room. We were given a private room with a full-size bed for all of us to sleep in and a couple drawers, which was fine because we didn't have much. Mm-hmm. We had a shared bathroom with the rest of the families there. There was a cafeteria that served breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Unfortunately, because of my schedule, I didn't get to take advantage of that or use it. I worked in South City, and luckily, I had a friend who had just moved kind of to the county area. They showed me how to use public transportation. It would take, my friend had agreed to become the babysitter for this time that I needed because I had to remove my children from their current daycare situation because he would be able to find them. So their entire life was changed that moment I decided to leave. But luckily, I had some pretty good friends who had stuck by me. For the most part, I isolated myself from a good majority of my friends, but I still had a few who stuck by me and were willing to help. And it would take us, every morning we had to grab the first bus, and it was like 5 o'clock in the morning we had to leave. The cafeteria wasn't open, and we didn't get home until after 9 p.m. at night, and the cafeteria was closed. We had to take four buses and a Metrolink just to get them to daycare and to work every day. And that was our routine Monday through Friday. On the weekends, I tried to make their life, I needed to make their life and mine as normal as possible. Thank goodness the city has a lot of free activities. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time at the zoo, the science center, just different parks. If the weather was cold, you know, in malls, just kind of looking and shopping and window shopping. So I just tried to make their life as normal as possible. That didn't leave me a lot of time to form any plan. And at a shelter, you're given, at that time, you were given 90 days. And it's very difficult to take your life that is in a trash bag and turn it into something in 90 days. It really is. And I was working full time, and I wasn't just making minimum wage. I was making barely a living wage. Mm-hmm. But
And you don't have time. I mean, yes. You're leaving, you said, by 5 a.m.
Yep.
and not getting home until after 9.
Right. And at that time when we got back, I mean, the shelter required you to do a chore. I had to complete my chore. I had to bathe my children. I had to get them in bed. They were young and probably not going to bed till 10 or after. And that alone made me feel like a bad parent on top of everything else. I was just doing the best I could, but I didn't. There wasn't time for me to stop and breathe and think, what next? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there was time for me to panic and think, oh my goodness, what next? How do I figure this out? Where do I start? A lot of the workers at the shelter were great, but I didn't have time with them because I was never there. They mm-hmm. had counseling for women. I never got to go through that just because of the fact that I wasn't there. I'm very appreciative for what they provided for us, but I just didn't know what was next. And the closer the time got, the more fear crept in me. And I didn't even have a car to live in. I couldn't burden any of my friends or family with four of us. My option was to actually go back to the abuser. It was to hope and pray that us leaving had somehow changed him. I knew deep down that that wasn't going to be the case, but I had to provide a home for my children. I didn't know what else to do. And every morning I woke up, I was just dreading because I knew that was one day closer to having to make the decision. Because I was saving money at the shelter, but not enough for security deposit and first month's rent for an apartment. I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. I had money saved, but just not enough, because I did have to buy all the food for my children. Because again, we couldn't take advantage of the cafeteria. You know, diapers, just any
those
the necessities.
Yeah.
Yes, that takes to just raising, providing for three children. As the time got closer, I was actually then informed. I mean, my anxiety level was to the roof and just fearful. And as peaceful as I got knowing we had a place, it just turned into a turmoil of to what now? Mm-hmm. What's the next step? And I had heard about transitional housing. And I thought, wow, what a concept. 24 months of housing to be able to transition your life. 2 years, I could do something with 2 years. I wanted to do something with 2 years. That was something that if I got into, I would not take advantage of. And there just so happened that there was a spot open. There was an availability, and I had to go through the whole interview process because there are many families out there fighting for that spot. Mm-hmm. There are thousands of people turned down every day from the homeless hotline because there aren't enough shelter beds available. There are even fewer transitional housing beds available. And I was fighting for that position, and that's horrible to say because that meant another family didn't get that spot. But we got it, and we were provided an instant home. And that was the one thing that I really liked about, I learned about different transitional housing programs. Because a couple of them did have openings, but I wanted to fight for that humanitary spot because of the fact that they own their own units. They're four family, two family, single home units scattered throughout St. Louis City and County. And that is what I needed. I needed a home. I needed something where when people drove by or my neighbors weren't like, hey, that's a program home. Hey, she's a client. For my own personal self-esteem, that instant, okay, this is okay. I needed a home. I needed my own bathroom, my own kitchen. I needed not to be labeled as a client. I needed to be Amy. Even the program may have called me a client, but anyone around me, I was mm-hmm. Amy. And I needed that. I needed that to be able to focus on other things and not just constantly worrying that I'm in this program. Not only did they provide me with a home and all the utilities and completely furnished, so I truly could stop worrying about that at that moment. I was able to focus on other things. My oldest daughter was born premature, and she had a learning disability, and the caseworker for Humanitry, who was just amazing, was able to help me get my child into school and also get her an IEP and help me along with that and going to meetings. And it was just such a support, like somebody cared. I was actually back into the city, South City, so it didn't take me as long to get back and forth to work with public transportation. I was able to get a routine back of cooking and cleaning and all the things that people may not like. I was actually able to do and enjoy and appreciate it.
You don't know how much you appreciate those things until they're gone.
Yes. I'm not a very good cook, but the fact that I could have my own kitchen and cook if I wanted or when I wanted to was just, and you do, you take advantage of that and you want to cook. It was a very good feeling. They helped me set up a budget, which I thought I was good at, but they helped me tone that up and get it where I needed it to be. It was something I needed, but there was still, they kind of gave me some hope. It really did kind of give me some hope, like, okay, I can do this. Like, I could see a plan forming. There was still something missing, because while on the outside, I may have been like, okay, I'm hopeful I can do this. Mm-hmm. On the inside, I was very angry and I was very mad at myself for allowing things to get that way, but at God. I questioned a lot. How was this being allowed to happen? What did I do so bad that not only did I have to go through this, but my children were suffering as well? I was very angry at God that I had to go through this. And it got to the point where it was actually easier to believe there wasn't a God, God didn't exist, than to believe that a God existed who would allow this to happen to not just me, but to children. And I was struggling with that big time. And Humanitree, my case manager, was able to talk to me about this. And they also had a chaplain on staff. And both of them were able to talk to me and reassure me that God does exist and he does love me and that there is a purpose for everything that is happening. And I don't know what that purpose is. I wasn't allowed to see it, but in the end, I would know it. I would know that, hey, this is the result of all of that struggle I went through. There is this great reward, and it was going to take time. And that God is working behind the curtains, and it wasn't any of my business what he was working on. I just had to follow through and to just trust. And while that was very difficult, because I had lost a lot of trust in just people in general, I had to just trust that God was, there was a plan. There was a plan for me and my children. And 2 years later, I graduated the program. And I didn't just graduate the program. I really, in 24 months, was able to transform. I became a strong, confident, independent woman, as opposed to the scared girl who allowed people to abuse her and walk on her. I had my faith back. I was a good mom, and not just, I didn't become a good mom. I realized I'm a good mom, which makes a person feel good to just know that and to have other people tell you that. And I also saved up enough money to pay off all my past debt, which that vehicle I left behind, he didn't pay. I didn't pay. It got repossessed. The apartment we lived in was, he got evicted. He didn't pay. Drug and alcohol can take over you to where he wasn't using money in the brightest and wisest of ways. He got evicted. The landlord refused to take my name off of the lease. So that was on my record as well. I didn't think and turn off the utilities before I left. Those were all in my name. So the utility companies eventually cut those off and I had to pay all that off. I was able to save up enough to pay all of that off. And the program also connected me with the first-time homebuyer program. I went through that program, learned everything about, you know, the responsibilities of being a homeowner, and said, you know what, this is what I want. I can do this. And Humanitree, the transitional housing program, gave me the confidence to say, I can do this. And I had enough saved up to put a down payment on my own home. So I went from being homeless, because you are still considered homeless if you're in transitional housing, mm-hmm. to being a homeowner, which was just, it was something I was so very proud of. But it also gave me something else. During that process, I got to know a lot of the staff and the executive director, and I talked to them a lot about what did homeless people go through? What did it feel like? What would help? What couldn't help? What resources are out there? And during the process of transitioning into my own home, they were starting up a new program, and they were looking for case managers. And my case manager had thrown my name out there to the executive director that, hey, why, I think Amy may, this may be something she could do. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed for it, and I became a case manager for for homeless families in the city of St. Louis for a permanent housing program.
What does a case manager do?
You know, we walk alongside people. We are there through their entire journey. We're the person to tell them, you know what, you can do this. And the fact that I did it was able to help other people see that you can do this. It's hard. It is the hardest thing that you will go through. But emotionally, it's very difficult what you will go through. But if you just believe in yourself, and if you can't, I will. I don't know how many times I called my case manager saying, I can't and I don't know how. She would say, you can and I'll show you. That's what a case manager is. Mm-hmm. When you don't believe, they believe for you. When you don't know how, they show you. They may even do for you and show you how to do it for yourself the next time. We're just there for everything and anything. A lot of times we're the people they call before 911. And that's when you say, hey, you need to call 911. And then eventually they learn, I need to call 911 first before I call this person. So we're kind of like a life coach, I would imagine. And it's something that I would have never, ever, ever, ever have done in my entire life. I'm a person who I need to walk it before I talk it. And God created me, and He knew that about me. He knew that was the working behind the curtain, what I believe, was He knew I had to walk it before I could talk it. And He led me here. This, I truly believe that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be helping people. I had to go through it in order to realize that, but it is the best career I could have ever chosen, or actually was thrown upon me, which I truly am appreciative for.
Vocations are often given. They're not necessarily always chosen.
Yes.
And I want to hear more about that vocation. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue hearing Amy's story. Amy Kaufman serves as Director of Development at Humanitree, and what a beautiful story. From difficult days, dark days, to now using that experience to serve others. We're going to continue the conversation here on Faith and Family. Stick around for more right after this break.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
When Samuel Forrest held his baby son for the first time, doctors told him he had Down syndrome. After walking into his wife's hospital room with Leo in his arms, his wife gave him an ultimatum. Give the baby up for adoption or I'm divorcing you. Samuel didn't consider adoption for a moment, and his wife, true to her word, started divorce proceedings when Leo was a week old. Samuel has very little money to take Leo back to his native country of New Zealand, where family would love Leo. So he asked for contributions on an internet site to raise enough for 1 year so Leo wouldn't have to be in daycare and he could take care of him. Samuel felt his son had lost enough already. In 9 days, people had given over $100,000.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Missouri National Guard. Aired by the Missouri Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran in St. Louis.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man. No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
Worldwide KFUO is easy to find on AM 850 in St. Louis and online at KFUO.org. Through our contacts page online, you can ask us questions. And there is good old snail mail, too. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. The worldwide leader of confessional Lutheranism. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for more than 90 years.
Hello from Michigan. We are Roger and Leela Thurow, members of Our Savior Lutheran Church, located in Scottville, just a few miles from the Lake Michigan shoreline. For the past 3 years, Leela and I have been day sponsors on KFUO in honor of our wedding anniversary. The voice of KFUO streams into our home, bringing the blessings of programs like Law and Gospel, Thy Strong Word, Book Talk, Moments of Assurance, and many more. If the messenger of good news has blessed you, we would like to encourage you to consider becoming a KFUO day sponsor. This opportunity to be a KFUO day sponsor reminds me of the words of a great hymn. If you cannot speak like angels, if you cannot preach like Paul, you can tell the love of Jesus, you can say he died for all.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking with Amy Kaufman, Director of Development at Humanitree, and Amy sharing her personal story of life as the challenges, the changes, the things that happen in life, going from life that where you encountered domestic violence and homelessness. And right before we went to the break, we were just talking about how you had become now a caseworker for the agency and your own personal experience shaping how you help meet the needs of others who are going through similar circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. As I had said prior, that case management, I hadn't even known. I mean, I knew social worker existed, but I didn't know that was not a field I'd ever even looked at. And what I went through brought to light that, hey, I can help other people, and I wanted to, and they offered me. The fact that they even offered that position to me was such an honor, and I wanted to jump all over it. How can you say no when you have been helped in such a way that completely changed your life? You can't walk away from that. You can't walk away from the other people out there who are like you, who need help. And maybe there was something that I experienced that could bring something to somebody else's life. I could share something. And a lot of people had said to me, you know, there's always that moment when you know that's where my life took that left turn. You know, I was going straight, and that one moment, just everything happened. Would I change that moment? And you know, and I wouldn't have to go through any of my struggles I went through. Would I change that? And my response is absolutely not. Absolutely not. I am the person I am today because of what I experienced. And I wouldn't. I am very happy now. The home I actually purchased, my neighbor introduced me to my husband. So, I mean, I got a career out of this. I got a husband from this experience. I am doing what I love. Every day I wake up and, you know, every night I go to bed, I helped somebody. Now I'm the director of development, so I don't work directly mm-hmm. with a family or an individual. But I look at it now on a broader scope. I'm not just helping. We had maybe a case out of 10. Now I get to help raise funds and money and donations mm-hmm. for all of our programs, for all of those people struggling and going through something. So I'm just really proud of who I've become. And we had spoken on the break about who my children have become and how this shaped them into becoming the people that they are. And at the time when I just thought, why in the world would God allow children to go through this? Mm-hmm. I now know why. If I can share,
yeah.
My daughter had she's a senior, and she had gotten her class to adopt one of our families, homeless families, for Christmas. So they were able to provide all the children and the mother uh-huh. With gifts for Christmas. So they had something underneath the tree, which I was just so very proud of. That's something she thought of her own. She came to me, Mom, I want to do something. Can I help? How? Now, throughout their entire life, they have volunteered mm-hmm. with the agency in different ways and manners. Maybe it was, you know, helping to clean up a yard or to help me with a mailing or whatever the case was. They've always kind of been involved. We used to have a daycare center in the agency. My children grew up in that daycare center. So the agency as a whole is kind of their family. It's what they know. It's what they do. So they see all of us around them giving and doing, and they've experienced giving. So that's who they've become. My son just recently became a Marine in November and graduated boot camp. And that evening, and we were in San Diego, that evening after graduation, him and his buddies wanted to go out on the town and just kind of be free and, mm-hmm. and explore a city that they've been kind of watching behind a wall. And so he went out that night. The next morning when he came home, he was putting on this, or when he came back to the hotel, he was putting on this hooded sweater that I had packed all of his clothes I had never seen before.
Mom's still packing his clothes for the Marine.
And yes. And had asked him, you know, hey, where'd you, I thought maybe he purchased it, where he got that from. And he said in complete awe and amazement, Mom, this lady bought it for me last night when I gave my coat to a homeless man on the street. This lady bought this sweater for me. And it was like $55, Mom. She bought this sweater. And to look at my son and to know he didn't think anything about giving the coat off of his back to another human being on the street in need, it just says something about who he is and his character. And he was more in awe and thankful for the sweater that was bought, which I am very thankful mm-hmm. for too, that a woman said, hey, you know, let me look out for this boy and make mm-hmm. sure he's not cold. But I asked him, like, you gave your coat to a guy on the street? And he said, Mom, he had on a ripped t-shirt and some shorts. It was cold out last night. He needed the coat more than I did. And he really just didn't even think twice about it. And how many of us can look going, hey, I would give the coat off of my back to another human being. I don't know that I personally have even done this in this field. Mm-hmm. You know, I give things to my clients. If they're in need, I'll give them a referral or a resource, or, hey, this came in as a mm-hmm. donation, you can have this. But to take something off of my own back and to give it to somebody, I would say that what we went through shaped him into mm-hmm. being that person, and I wouldn't change it.
It's so easy for us, you know, in North America, in the United States, one of the wealthiest countries in the world,
yes.
really, to become caught up, trapped in this culture of consumerism.
Yes.
To be caught up in, I need this, I need that. Our identity is found in our belongings.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm sure your son grew up without, you know, probably during those very formative years, grew up without a lot of belongings.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just blessed with such good children. They would say, Mom, can we have this? And I would just look at them and they would know, oh, okay, it's okay, Mom, if we don't have it. They're just such gracious children to anything we got. They appreciate it, and they weren't, and they still aren't today, I need this, I need that. You know, my daughters don't go around wanting, you know, Gucci or Coach, not that there's anything wrong with that, but they just, they to them, there are just other things that are that are their priority.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a parent, appreciate that. I know that, you know, they're out in the world and they're good people, that when they see somebody in need or suffering, that they will try to help at least. You know, if maybe they can't do everything, but, you know, they want to help. And that's important. That's important to me now. That probably wasn't mm-hmm. important to me 20 years ago. I mean, I didn't grow up in a household that we went to church every day, and, you know, we gave our offering, and if there was an extra special box, we put our money in, but I never had that experience that my children got. And at the time, I thought was just so devastating, actually shaped them
sure.
and myself into growing up and caring about other people and wanting to help and having this passion about it.
And it's to hear your story and to see how it shaped your life, to see how it shaped your children's, and what that has meant for you today, and how that has played an important part in your vocation. That's not to say that everybody needs to go out and be homeless in order to understand what homelessness
right.
is like, or to downplay everybody else's own lifestyle or the experience.
Right.
But we can give thanks to God for all that you have learned, all
yes.
that you've gained, and that your children have gained through this experience.
Yes. As I had said, I'm a person who I have to walk it in order to talk it. Like mm-hmm. You can just tell me something and I'm going to be like, I have to experience something in order to learn and to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows this about each of us. So my experience and the way I case manage doesn't take away from anybody, any other social worker or case manager, from the work they do, even if they haven't experienced it. It's just something I had to go through in order to get that kind of passion to do what I do. And other people are just instinctively born with it. I had to go through some pretty rough times to understand it. And I'm very appreciative of it.
Hmm. And so now serving as director of development
yes.
for Humanitree, having experienced life as a client, being homeless, and then serving as a case manager, and now serving as director of development, you kind of have this big picture now, I'm sure,
yes.
of how everything all fits together and yeah. the importance.
Yeah, it all has a connection. We are all just as equally as important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the agency has always run itself in that manner. The director of development isn't any more important than a case manager or our maintenance men who take care of our property.
Mm-hmm.
Nor any more important than our clients who we serve. I mean, we are all people. We all have a calling to do what we're supposed to do. And our job is right now to help those people going through something figure out what is going on in your life. And we all do that in different ways from our different positions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I'm not the only person in the agency who has a story. We all have stories, but we have another case manager who also went through the program. One of our board members was a client of mine. But we all experienced something different in our journey through mm-hmm. this. So I just think it's wonderful that our agency is able to bring in people who passed a previous client, who experienced this and who know what it's like, and they accept us and want to listen to our voice to say, hey, we've gone through this. Maybe we can try this. Or, hey, what about this? Or these are our thoughts. And they listen. The agency always, since I entered in that very first day, treated me as a human being, as a person. And I appreciated that. And I also want to do that in my job with the agency and just in general as well.
Well, and as you speak about those who have been clients now serving with Humanitree, whether it's on staff or a board member or a volunteer
yes.
today, that is all of those are examples, living proof of how this work, this noble task that Humanitree takes on of caring for families, for individuals, works. It's not a system that, yes, every system has its flaws, but it's not a system that's just climbing an uphill battle and can never win.
Right.
You know, you're not in some sort of fight that that, well, we give it our best, but we're just never going to win at this fight. The work that you do, as you go about it, using all the resources that you've been given, has proven to do what you set out to do.
Yes. If someone were to ask me, does the program really help people? Absolutely. I am living proof. My children are living proof. Where I believe that had transitional housing not existed, had that bed not been available for me, I would have went back to the abuser. And I don't know that I'd be alive sitting here talking to you today. I truly believe it saved my life. In more than just one way, in more than just actually saving my life. It totally transformed who I am and who I eventually became. And it's still to this day, I'm still working in the agency. I'm still learning. I mean, through every client who passes through, every person you talk to, every volunteer who walks through the door, I think we're constantly learning, and it's shaping. It continues. You know, I walked through the door 16 years ago. So 16 years later, this agency is still shaping me. And when you walk in our door, you actually can feel, and you ask anybody, you can feel the presence of God. He is working within our agency. We pray together. We celebrate together. When we think, wow, this is bad, something, God swoops in and says, no, it's not that bad. And when we all think we don't know what to do or where to go, how to help this person, how to help the agency, God swoops in and says, I've got this, you know, here's a plan, or here's this, or a volunteer will just show up, or a donation will show up, or a resource will show up. We all believe, all of us, it's not just my thinking, but within our agency, that is God. He is definitely behind us. We're doing His work. How many other people can say, we house the homeless, we clothe the naked, we feed the hungry, and we're doing all of that with God's blessing. And it's just growing up Catholic and having gone to church every single day for my life during grade school, Monday through Friday, the only day I didn't go to church was Saturday. It felt forced upon me. We didn't pray at dinner. There were a lot of things. We were Catholic, but I don't know that we were religious or spiritual, if that makes sense. I feel so much closer to God today than I did growing up in a church community, the way I grew up. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It's what we do truly works. And I'm not the only person to say that. We help. I personally, in 14 years of being a case manager, have helped many people succeed, and they come back. And like you said, they become volunteers or become donors or become board members. And it's just, it's a family. When you treat people like people, they want to stick around.
Sure.
And they want to help other people. And it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. I feel very privileged, honored, and lucky.
And you bring up a good point. When we're caring for these earthly needs, these human needs, that helps us, gives us more opportunities to hear God's word, to receive His good gifts.
Yes.
So that we can be strengthened in faith, that we can continue on faithfully. Yes, there are hard times, and those may be faith strengthening times as well. But to have this support from our fellow humans, especially from our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ,
yes, absolutely.
Can certainly be supportive of us in faith. Who are some of those people who have been along, who've come alongside you? You mentioned along the way you had some faithful friends who helped you with, you know, getting from point A to point B. Those people those friends that network of people who helped you make that transition, whether it was showing up at the you know, that first night at the restaurant, to you know, the people who supported you along the way from transitional housing. I know that they're in your case manager. Who are all those people that were an important part of that progress?
Oh my goodness. I've been so blessed to have many, many friends in my life, and some have stayed, some have gone, as does any in anybody's life. But I've had some really strong friends along the way, and there are so many people just to be thankful for. But I mean, even the hotline person who you call, they're not judging you, they're not mean, they're caring. When just that first phone call, that first interaction of, I'm in a situation, I need help, that person helped me. They took the time to look and research, was there a shelter opening? My coworker who brought me there, who brought me home and, you know, who helped me figure out what's important, what do you take, what goes in that mm-hmm. trash bag, to the worker who picked me up at that restaurant, to the day, to the weekend staff, because I didn't get to know the week staff, the weekly staff, but the weekend staff at the shelter, to Humanitree. My case manager was an amazing individual, and she actually just left the agency the end of last year. So her and I became co-workers mm-hmm. and friends, and we went through a lot of life journey together. You know, she had two children. I've had a lot of coworkers come and go, but they all have such impact. Chaplains who really impacted my life through Humanitree. The volunteers, to know that somebody is volunteering their time. They're not getting paid. They're volunteering their time to serve your Mother's Day lunch, to provide you gifts for Christmas. It's just amazing to think that people out there care about you, especially when you're going through that dark time. Mm-hmm. You may not, and I know I didn't at that time, have the ability to express my gratitude and thankfulness, but trust that when I went home that evening, it was like, wow, somebody, that was actually a lot of fun, and somebody cares. You know, I'm not in this alone. It's not just me, my children. It's not just the caseworker. It's not just the chaplain. There are other people out there who I don't know and who don't know me, but who care and who want to help in some way. And that's just amazing. It's an amazing thing. And it continues again, 14, 16 years later, it's still going on. And I still see that. And it's just something that I have a lot of, I'm very passionate about what we do. And I want people to come on over and check it out mm-hmm. and help if you want to. If anything about my story, if you need help, please get it. If you're in a situation where you need to leave, please call the hotline. That number is actually 314-802-5444. Call that. If you want to help people, call our number, 314-772-7720, and I can help make that happen. We can get you involved in some way, shape, or form to start helping a person transition their life. Even the smallest thing can help somebody. Maybe not directly, but indirectly.
Whether it's as an individual or as a family, you can help, or maybe a group from your congregation wants to do something to help. As we talked the other day, groups could, a congregation or a group in a church could get together and throw an event to support Humanitree. They could put together a special event as a fundraiser, or even a fundraiser to raise awareness about what Humanitree is, to invite someone from Humanitree over to talk about what Humanitree does.
Absolutely. And the most amazing thing is you're just hearing my story. There are so many other stories, and this is just one program. We have two other programs out mm-hmm. there doing amazing work. We have our chaplain in the jail who's performing baptisms. I mean, that's just... That's just amazing to mm-hmm. me. And then we have our ex-offender program, and we have someone who walks alongside them saying, hey, we accept you and we want to help you. Welcome back to the community. It's just amazing the work that goes on mm-hmm. every single day in that building. Mm.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story today. I haven't used all the Kleenexes yet, so it's there are a few left. Thank you so much for sharing your story. What a beautiful story. Amy Kaufman, Director of Development for Humanitree, thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word. Going to study God's Word with Pastor Whedon right here on Listener Supported. Actually, I take that back. Normally, Thy Strong Word is coming up, but we're going to go to Ash Wednesday service here at Peace Lutheran Church in St. Louis. Hope you can stick around for that and more great programming right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.